On this episode of A State of Control, we talk about interoperability and ecosystems. We get into the details of why it's important for products to play nicely together and what really does it mean to be involved in an ecosystem. All that and more on A State of Control.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
AV Nation is brought to you by Atlona, the go-to provider for AV signal distribution and control in corporate, higher education, and residential spaces. Learn more at atlona.com.
A State of Control.
A State of Control, episode 106. One is the loneliest number. Welcome to A State of Control, an AV Nation podcast that highlights the control, programming, and automation aspects of the audiovisual industry. My name is Steve Greenblatt. I'm your host. Thanks for joining us today. So on today's show, we're going to be talking with a couple of manufacturers, and we're going to be speaking a bit about product interoperability and inclusion in ecosystems. And these are some hot topics that are certainly talked about quite a bit in the industry. This is 2023 when we're recording this. So it's something that is very commonly focused upon. So we'll get into the details as to why. And before we do and introduce those guests, I'd like to say hi to my partner here at A State of Control. He's none other than Rich Fregosa. Hey, Rich, how are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. It's good to see you. It's glad to have another show. I'm actually doing back-to-back shows. I had a chance to pinch hit yesterday, and so glad to be in the AV Nation rotation with my partner here.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're a big player on the AV Nation circuit these days. So our two guests today, one of them is a returning guest and the other is a newcomer, but not somebody that's unfamiliar to AV Nation. But first, let me introduce someone who was last with us on episode 93. And I've gotten to know her quite a bit over the past year or so. And her name is Emily Eicher, and she's from QSIS. Hi, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
And last but not least, this is somebody who should have had on probably a while back, somebody who I know for many, many years. And of course, this audience probably knows her as well. And she is Gina Sansevero, and she's from Atlas IED. Welcome, Gina.
Thanks, Steve. You were one of the first people that I met in this industry so many years ago. And I'm so grateful to still be connected to you and so grateful that you've asked me to be on the show.
Thanks for being here. I was trying to count the number of years. It's quite a number, certainly over 10.
Yes.
Well, one of the things that we talk about often in this podcast is about the role of control systems. And historically, they've really been the glue that has held together AV systems as a whole. They're kind of like this central nervous system. And we've really worked hard to try to make disparate products work together and try to really create collaboration. But in recent years, there's also been a little bit of friction between companies that have been more competitive and have really resisted a little bit to have their products work together for reasons that are business reasons. And there's also some products that have been a little walled off, and we've talked about those as well. But what we want to talk a little bit about today is what is really the value in making products work together. So Rich, one of the things that I was thinking about before this is how programmers are really tasked with kind of making anything that they're given work. And it doesn't really matter what the circumstances, what is the business relationships between the manufacturers. The programmer has to make it work. So that being said, how much of a voice should a programmer have in talking about products that may be that may play nicely together versus others that are a little bit more of a challenge?
Well, if you asked this question 3.5 years ago, there'd be a whole lot more pushback because integrators and manufacturers were very focused on monogamy. And an integrator could be in a monogamous relationship with a manufacturer and have a longstanding relationship that was reciprocal. And then a little virus came along and little things, the dreaded phrase of supply chain came along. And all of a sudden, what control system programmers have been doing from the beginning became a business reality. It wasn't the, oh, we don't use this or we don't use that, you know, because we're using this. Just make it work, right? That would always be the answer, right? Just make it work. Well, you know, and you'd kind of shoehorn it together and there wouldn't necessarily be that opportunity to have the conversation. And also, it was a hardware-based world. You know, I mean, when you're dealing with a 25-pin connector or, you know, having to crimp a very specific type of cable that only goes over certain distances and you had those limitations, it was a lot easier to kind of stick to, well, that's the way it's always been. That's the way it's going to be. Fast forward now, as we are hopefully coming out of the supply chain issues that we've been faced with for the past couple of years, but more importantly, the software-based developments that are out there, I think that you need to be able to go to your team and find out what are practical field applications that are available. We had a project the other day where, you know, everything that was kind of spec'd was great, but nobody considered the scheduling system. So, you know, all of these parts were going to work great for being able to conference and you could see them well and you could hear them well. And, you know, the space was lit properly, but then there was this big gap where nobody considered how do we make sure that somebody can actually walk into that room and not jump in on somebody else's meeting? And it was one of those things where it was just like, well, that's the way it was always done. But nobody considered the backend changes that occurred that disrupted, you know, just kind of the way that it was always, that it's always worked. So I think that, you know, because software has eaten the world, because of the speed things move at, is so quick at this pace, you have to be more willing to collaborate and to take field notes back in and work. And it's tough because, you know, potentially the people who are the check signers are having to change their way of thinking, you know, or the sales engineers are having to change their way of thinking because, you know, let's talk about it from an integrator standpoint, right? You've got sales engineers who are more boxes, more money. Right. So, you know, why necessarily do you look at something that's going to be a software solution that necessarily doesn't have the same commission structure? You know, it even comes down to how the teams are aligned, right? And how you set your hierarchy, you know, because in the past, right, it was just, we talked about it in the last show, which like, you know, the guy in the bucket who shows up, you know, the guy with the laptop and sets his stuff on the little portable desk in the bucket, you know, or gal. And they just sit and code away. And that was kind of the life of the AV systems programmer. It's completely different now. I mean, half the time they wanted to be in your conduit to IT, which is the key to getting anything done. So, you know, more now than ever. And I think also because of the workforce that's going to be coming in, you have to be willing to give that respect to the remaining people who are going to be in the field who are responsible for deploying these solutions that aren't just walking in and plugging in a cable. It's so much more than that at this point that you're not going to last long if you can't figure out a way to be able to make that work.
Yeah. And I think just to jump off of that, you see a lot of integrators, you know, switching to doing managed services as well, where, you know, in the past, like you said, they've just been installing boxes and now all of a sudden those same integrators are, you know, remotely on site every day for those customers. Like, we can't continue thinking the same way because our customers expect better, you know, the end user expects better and just regular old boxes aren't going to cut it anymore. So yeah, that's a lot of the reason why, you know, a lot of the integrations that we do at QSYS is, you know, they're very much focused on like cloud-based integrations as well as those hardware integrations, because that's where everything's going. You know,
Gina, I'll have you join in on this because one of the things that I wanted to talk about is what some manufacturers' role in helping to make their products easier to integrate, and also how much is taken into consideration when it comes to a programmer's role and the challenges that they face. And a lot of times we look at the installation aspects of it, but there's also a lot of other parts that are a little less tangible.
Sure. I mean, for those of us who have been in the industry for more than 10 years now, we've seen a complete re-evolution of what's happened, right? We saw all manufacturers being very siloed, very much creating a product that was within the A or the V or the software portion of the industry. And then as we progressed, like as a timeline moves by, you've seen mergers and acquisitions, which have allowed manufacturers to become that one-stop shop, create a proprietary ecosystem and not let anybody else in. And now with supply chain, as Rich mentioned, we've seen a swing of the pendulum in the other direction. Yes, as a manufacturer, you always want to have the biggest piece of that ecosystem pie. But is it really reasonable and is it responsible for you to have every piece of that ecosystem pie? And the answer for me, and this is my opinion, the opinions of myself are not that of my employer. Just a disclaimer. My opinion is that it is not responsible for a manufacturer to have the entire piece of an ecosystem pie without allowing a conduit into it for instances like we've seen over the past couple of years. So from a programming standpoint, I think that this is where the magic happens. Programmers have always been the ones to create the magic. Manufacturers have been the ones that gave you the boxes to create that magic, right? So from that standpoint, we do at Atlas IED, we do validation testing. We do interoperability testing. We ensure that there is a conduit into the solutions that we've created. We partner with programmers who are able to create modules to ensure that there's interoperability where there could potentially be a hiccup. So I think that just from a responsibility and a ease of use for not only the integrator partners that we have, but also for the end users, consistency is key from an end user standpoint. So how do you create the most consistent but long-term experience possible for them? And that's by allowing the flexibility for programmers to create similar systems using different manufacturers should the need arise.
Very well said. Emily, Gina talked about ecosystems several times, so I'm glad she did because it was a great lead in to what I wanted to have you speak about. Your role is actually involved in product ecosystems. So talk a little bit about that and what does that mean? And I think that there's a misnomer a little bit there, or there's a misunderstanding because a lot of people use the definition differently. And yep. Gina kind of clarified by saying proprietary ecosystems versus open ecosystems. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So my title is Ecosystem Product Manager. And here at QSC QSIS, we basically kind of divide things up in multiple ways, but the two main ways you can kind of divide it up is we have a platform that's QSIS. That's, you know, QSIS as a software, as an OS, that's the brains, right? Then you have, you know, your QSIS products and everything, peripherals and all those things. And then we have the ecosystem, and that's where we play with others. So that's basically, you know, your QSIS plugins that are integrating with your hardware products, your software products, cloud-based things. But then we also do our alliances, which is our Microsoft, Zoom, Google, you know, those big people we want to work with. But yeah, my job is really more on the ecosystem side. So, you know, partners like Sennheiser, things like that, bringing those people in through our technology partner program, and then making sure that they also have the resources that they need through our developer partner program so that, you know, we can make sure that the plugin or whatever integration we're making with that partner ends up working and is supported so that our customers have less pain points with integrating with those partners and us. So that's kind of how we view the ecosystem is more so how we play with others and bringing others in, because as every manufacturer knows, and, you know, Gina pointed this out, it's like, you can't make every possible product ever. I mean, we're just going to continue to innovate as an industry, and no one's ever going to be able to keep up with every single product. So we have to work well with others. And, you know, and it also helps with supply chain that you're not having to manufacture all those things, especially if there's, you know, hardware components to that. So that's kind of how we're, you know, we're positioning in the market. And it's really exciting because, you know, we've made a big deal about the ecosystem as well as our alliances. To, you know, just going forward, it's a big part of who we are as a company.
Yeah, I think Emily brings up a really good point there, especially in an industry where standards are in air quotes. It becomes really difficult to ensure interoperability. It becomes really, really excessively expensive for a single manufacturer to support all aspects of this industry. So I feel like there are kind of cut and dry standards, we're really going to need that interoperability that programmers truly ensure happens. I can't imagine the job that programmers have, and this is not to like pat you on the back or anything. I just don't understand the job that you have to keep up with the constant innovation and evolution in this industry. You know, our engineers, our product development teams are constantly at work, times that by hundreds. There's 800 exhibitors at Infocom. There's over 900, almost 1,000 at ISE. When you look at that and you're trying to plug all of these pieces together and they're changing every year, they might not be shipping every year, but they're changing every year. My goodness, that is a heck of a lift for our programmers.
Rich, why don't you weigh in from a programmer standpoint? What does that look like, and what is the will programmers get to the point where they're going to look to try to simplify things and find ways of being able to leverage compatibility and so forth, or is really the challenge what they really thirst for?
I think it's interesting in that programmers could potentially leverage their desirability to other companies if they decide to invest in focusing on how they can make as many systems compatible as possible. I'm viewing this as not only from the business owner standpoint, but also for programmers who are coming up and looking for direction in the industry, in that the more that you are willing right now to invest in being as multifaceted as possible, so that you at least get a good understanding of everything that's out there, items that are coming up, it gives them a unique position to be able to say, look, I am becoming a more valuable part of this organization. And, you know, it gives them an opportunity to be more than just the programmer. And again, I mean, that's what we're tailoring this to. Because, you know, manufacturers are going to go off and they're obviously going to keep pushing what they feel is their best technology. That's just, you know, that's just part of being in business, right? They're the best. They believe that they're best. They want their products to be out there. But end users are going to want what they think is the best, and they're dealing with all kinds of other factors. And that's always been the dilemma, right? But with software-based services now, it makes the boxes less important, because a box is going to be a box is going to be a box, but they're all still delivering the same solution. Are you able to get a Zoom room client working properly? Is a Microsoft Teams room working? Is a Google Meet working? What if you have to do all three, right? So all of a sudden, what used to be, you know, those closed silos, and let's just take video conferencing as an example, right? 15 years ago, You know, you got you. You know, what was it? You can have any color you want as long as it's black. If you were gonna do high end video conferencing, you had a solution, not solutions. Solution. Now you can go into any organization, and it's literally at the Baskin Robbins of options. Whether you walk into a huddle space, you know, desk share. You know, I'm hearing a whole new phrase today. Desk sharing, right? They're co-opting desks now because of the hybrid solutions that are going to be coming into the workplace. So the first thing that I think of going is I'm going, gosh, now I've got to spend a day figuring out how desk sharing is going to work in a greater ecosystem, you know, with all of the variables that can go along with that, right? And all of a sudden you start thinking about desk sharing. You're like, hey, well, what if you took wellness into place with that and circadian lighting? What about, you know, what about presets for users? I'm like, all of a sudden your mind starts racing with these things. This is a software-based solution. All of a sudden it becomes, well, what if it goes into cloud? You know, and I know that manufacturers are looking at that going, holy cow, how are we going to deal with this? And how do we deal with sound masking? How do we deal with extension routing? I mean, all of these things start coming into play. So, you know, what that means for the programmer themselves is, you know, in sales, it's ABC, always be closing. With programming right now, it's ABL, always be learning. You know, you have it. And, you know, I'm a 50-something year old Latino guy, and I'm sitting there going, I'm going back to school every day. You know, I'm grateful to Atlas IED and for QSIS for their educational tracks. You know, I've been immersed in those, you know, and the old dog's having to learn new tricks myself on this one. And I'm also learning at that point where I'm going, you know what, I need to be able to empower others to take this. I need to know a kind of the 30,000 foot view of what's going on, but I need to myself look at others in my organization to be able to empower them and give them the ability to be, you know, those thought leaders at that point. And I think that from a business standpoint, that's going to be the really interesting part from an integrator standpoint, even from, you know, mom and pop programming houses. You've got to decide how you're going to invest in your people, because it's going to be brain share that you're going to be dealing with. Is like, who's going to pay the most for that brain share? Because you've got people who come in and they go, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this, I've got uses of this. Yeah, I didn't use your software, but it doesn't matter because I can walk over and use this software. That's an eminently hireable person. That's somebody who can write their own ticket. And so that's, you know, kind of the advice that I'm, you know, that's kind of what I'm laying down for everybody, which is, hey, look, you know, this is more important than anything else. Come out with your CS degree. That's great. But now you've got to go to 2.0. Yeah. You have to be willing, because there is such a wide vista of systems out there that you've now got to cobble together. And you know, again, if you started in the pandemic, it's been trial by fire. You had no choice, right? We were, you know, it was kind of like the old days. I was like, yeah, this is square peg, round hole. We're going to shave it. And all right, here we go. That's just going to get accelerated. Because end users are going to ask for it. And because the workspace, you know, and again, education and government and RESI and all of these things, you know, but like, you know, even just the tip of the iceberg is going to be the workspace, because that will go out to education, that will go out to government, that will go out to all of those others. Because once they see it adopted and people see it and they come in and do a presentation someplace, you know, in a small space, and they go, hey, that worked. It's going to grow. It's going to be interesting.
I actually had a question for you and Steve, Rich, kind of flipping the table here really quick. Now, we're talking about audiovisual, but clearly in workspaces, corporate buildings, education, government, transportation, you name it, it's there. Hospitality, a whole bunch of other industry ecosystems are playing with us, right? We're talking about, you know, HVAC. We're talking about security systems. We're talking about clearly IT. So you have all of these other industries that now you have to somehow figure out how to interface while our industry continues to innovate. And I'm sure their industries are not staying still either. How do you learn their language?
What I would add, I guess, is that we're starting to see more specialists, that people that are take different parts of the responsibility. So one of them that my company does is we focus on the middleware. We focus on making the APIs work together. Others focus on more of the user experience. Others focus more on the back-end code. Others focus more on what we call, I guess, business logic. How do you want the system to work, and what are the specific needs of the user? That's what I would, where I think things are headed, because we've tended to have a singular solution and one person responsible for it. I think, to your point, the greater the surface and amount of technology we have to cover, it just can't be done by one person anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, just kind of going off of actually everything everybody's been saying, I think it's important, you know, my background, I was a programmer. I worked for an integrator. I think it's important that anyone that is a programmer for the history, you know, for the future of their career and for where we are now, is to really always be thinking about the experience and kind of take yourself out of, you know, okay, I need to make this thing work, and kind of think about, okay, well, what is this enabling? And that will also just drive your business forward and your roadmap and what you're doing and what things need to work together to really bring that experience for the customer. Because people, like I said, they're expecting more from us. You know, they want to walk into a room and it just works. It's not like, you know, 15 years ago where you walk in, you got a VGA cable and you got all this different stuff and there's like 5-10 remotes. You know, it's not like that anymore. You want to walk in there, plug your computer in, or, you know, press a button and boom, you're in the meeting, or you're, you know, your shades are lowering, all these things. And that's that experience. So it's good to take that high level view sometimes, because I think programmers, we can get really like bogged down in the details, but that helps kind of at least motivate me going forward. So.
And kind of exactly what Emily's saying is, people walk in and want it to work. Now people walk in and want it to do more. You know, like I get into my car and I just got a new car. I haven't had a new car in 10 years. The evolution of that technology is causing me to sit down and go, I actually have to read the owner's manual. Not really. It's super intuitive, but it has come a long way. Now I have my maps from my phone right on the dash, right? My entire screen is a touch screen. Everything can do more than my expectation. And it makes my life easier, and it works. I mean, until it doesn't, but yeah, it works. So I think that's really kind of the nuts and bolts of it, is that it has to work, and then it has to do more, and it still has to work.
As we wrap up, one of the things that I think we should talk to both the our listeners and the programmer audience, as well as others who kind of want to understand better how products can be more interoperable, and how to make good choices. And you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we talked about the existence of walled gardens and products that are less open. And then Gina set talked about having, you know, ports into different ecosystems. Emily, I'll let you start on this. What are the recommendations that you would give to somebody to, in terms of when they're looking at products, what are some of the things to look for to ensure that this is something that they can invest in and that they're not going to find themselves in a dead end?
Yeah, I would say one thing is looking for products that say that they, you know, they're known for interoperability, and then ensuring that interoperability isn't being squelched by something else. So that could be another API on top of that. Maybe you don't have access to other things. But interoperability is great. And obviously, you know, your standard protocols, and realize that you're, you know, really knowing, okay, this platform that I'm using supports XYZ, you know, type of protocol, you know, for their API. So we can make this work. And kind of like what we do is we do API reviews first, and we make sure that, okay, this all makes sense. And we do like a proof of concept. So this is like pre-work, you know, so that you can make sure that this thing is actually going to work. And really, yeah, just doing the pre-work so you're not wasting your time, because, you know, there's as much as we would love everything to work nicely together. There's always those weird little gotchas that, you know, might need a, you know, an update on the platform, or might need, you know, something else in between it to, you know, to make it work. So it really just saves you time, just making sure that you get all your ducks in a row before you start, you know, committing to selling a product on a job.
Gina, it's kind of a similar question that, you know, we all, in the end, we know many people can make it work, but sometimes it's, can you make it work within the parameters of the project? Or can you make it work so that a client's going to be happy? Or can you make it work to meet a specific budget? What are some recommendations that you would give to somebody, or like from a manufacturer's standpoint, what are some of the things that you're thinking about when you're trying to address some of those needs?
Yeah, from a consultant standpoint, integrator standpoint, I would recommend that you ask questions of your manufacturer. Find out what processes for quality assurance, for validation, and for interoperability that they have in place. If they start kind of moving around your question, you might want to question whether or not they really want to work in the space and play nice with others. You know, we have a validation lab and a testing lab in Louisville. We allow our customers to come to that lab and take a tour while it's running, right? While our employees are there and look at the process. We have partners that, and they're not only within the audiovisual industry, but also within the IT and security industries, where we ensure that we test our products with their products. Some of the big players in security that potentially AV industry doesn't even know, but we have partnerships there that we work through and work with. So I just think ask questions, make sure that you know what you're getting into when you're choosing an ecosystem partner.
I think that's a good place for us to stop on this one. Thank you guys for sharing this insight. This is very valuable. And I think this is a conversation that needs to be continued, and I'm sure will be. And we'll, hopefully we can have a follow-up to discuss more of this. Emily Eicher from QSIS, thanks for being with us. How can people get in touch with you and learn more about QSIS?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn. It's Emily Eicher, E-I-C-H-E-R. You can also see me on QSIS Communities for Developers. Definitely recommend joining that if you are doing any sort of QSIS programming at all. Hang out with us on there. And yeah, I'll see you at the trade shows.
Wonderful. And I, you know, whether it's QSIS Community or others, it's such a great place, because if you want to get access to the people who are actually working on the product and the software, that's where you can find them. So that's a great asset to have. Gina Sansevero from Atlas ID. How can people get in touch with you? More about Atlas ID.
AtlasID.com. We're also on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, @Atlas_IED and @GinaSans. Instagram, but that's mostly food and dog pictures. And Atlas IED has a Facebook page. I do not. So that's where, but I really, really quickly, Steve and Rich, hats off to you. The fact that there are two women on this show and two men is exactly how we want to see the representation of this industry. You have done a great job, and I really commend you.
Appreciate that. Actually, while we have you, can you speak a little bit about the work that you do in the industry, promoting women in the industry? Because both Rich and I are big advocates, and it's something that we're proud of.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, really quick, the AVIXA Women's Council is one of the organizations, there you go, Emily, that supports and extends the network of women to ensure upward momentum. Wave It is an organization that we just launched that is kind of taking a three-pronged approach to bringing women into this industry and empowering women, and that would be education, so career development, recruiting, so outreach to bring more ladies in, and then also empowerment, so expanding the network and also bringing in those around us who are able to lift up and kind of minimize imposter syndrome, have a working, trustworthy group of people surrounding you that will help you to excel and succeed, whatever that means to you.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And just to clarify too, please don't think that these are exclusionary to women. Men are also welcome, correct?
Absolutely. In fact, we are only stronger the more diverse we are. So we encourage everybody to join both groups.
Rich, another great show. Any closing thoughts, and how can people reach you and find out what you're up to?
I just love sitting back and listening, because again, like I said, I learn a whole lot more when I get to sit back and hear from two powerhouses like Gina and Emily, and not only as individuals, but the companies that they represent are really committed to, of collaborating, across the board, equity and diversity and everything else. But, I've had the good fortune of dealing with both, and their companies quite recently. And it's been great, because there is that spirit of openness. Hopefully other manufacturers will take a look. Because again, if you're not changing the way they used to do things, and focusing on the way things need to be, you'll see more and more out of their stuff. And yeah, they will have everything. So, you never know. I focus on our guests. But if you do have to track down Uncle Richie anywhere, you can find me on the interwebs at Arfragosa's, the Twitter. It's also Instagram as well. But same thing, as kind of like food and dogs and my kid and, Magic the Gathering, silliness, stuff like that. If you want the company, you can find us at fragosadesign.com. But as I always say, first and foremost, where I hope you find me the most is here on aviation.tv and our slew of shows that cover all of our verticals, and hopefully here with my partner, Steve. Come visit us on our show. So that's always my message, and support our sponsors.
Absolutely. And check out all event coverages as well. We talk about InfoComm and other trade shows, and there's a lot of that on Aviation to get anything that you may have missed or get to see things through a different lens. So please check that out. For me, you can reach me at Steve Greenblatt on social media and my company Control Concepts at controlconcepts.net. And we always try to say, we want to hear from our audience. We want to expand our reach. We want to expand our guests. So, and also make sure that our topics are hitting home with you. So we look forward to your feedback. Please share your favorite episode, and please reach out to us, because we'd like to hear from you, whether we get to see each other in person or whether it's just a quick note or a message over social media. Please reach out. And with that, this has been State of Control.